Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the new news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, of course, you know, we have with us today Jeffrey Smith, and we're going to be talking about genetic engineering. And Jeff, were you over in Europe when I talked to you last?
Yes, you called me while I was traveling in Europe. I was speaking to the European Parliament, in Brussels at the European Parliament office, in Dublin, Cambridge University, UN conference in Paris. And while I was there, I got called to do a quick trip to Brazil to try and prevent some approvals of genetically modified corn there. So I've been kind of busy.
Well, are we making any progress? Are people, at least throughout the rest of the world, understanding the terrible things they're doing to us here in America?
More and more. We're realizing that we're feeding the products of an infant science to millions of people, releasing them into the environment where they can never be recalled, and that now we have overwhelming, irrefutable evidence that these foods are unsafe. And so that came out in my new book, Genetic Roulette, that's come out since I've been interviewed by you last time. And we've been presenting this book as evidence that genetically engineered foods need to be removed immediately. Otherwise, they may be continuing to produce untold catastrophes in health and the environment.
All right. Now, of course, these are primarily, what is it? Is it rice, rice and corn and soybeans and canola and cotton? Is there anything else?
Well, fortunately, rice is not commercialized. We just have a small amount of contamination of the rice varieties from one that was grown in field trials. We do have the main four are soy, corn, cotton, and canola. And then there's a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, as well as Hawaiian papaya. Now, those are the crops where the genes from one species, like from bacteria or viruses or other species, were forcibly inserted into the DNA. And the principal reason is to either allow the crop to not die when sprayed with herbicides, or to allow the crop to produce its own pesticide in every cell and in every bite. There's also some of the zucchini and the papaya is designed for resistance to disease, but that's a very tiny percentage of the genetically engineered crops that are growing in the world.
All right. Well, now you mentioned that we have certainly incontestable proof that there's danger there. And last time we talked, of course, there were some reports that had come out from Monsanto that had been suppressed. Is there more information that's come out, and can you sort of review that for us?
Yes, actually. I'll give you some recent information. I was speaking at the European Parliament office in Brussels to an open meeting briefing parliamentarians, and I was there with a senior scientist from the Russian National Academy of Sciences. And we already reported the initial research that she had, which was she fed rats genetically modified soybeans, female rats, and then about more than half of the offspring died within 3 weeks, compared to only about 10% of the offspring whose mothers were fed non-genetically engineered soy. The information that has arisen since then is this. She did this experiment three times, and each time she got the same enormous increase in infant mortality among the offspring of mother rats fed genetically engineered soy. Now, the soy is the same soy that's in the soy we eat in the United States. So I'll let you know about the latest chapter in this in just a moment.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that this is well known to the people who are producing these genetically modified foods, and everything is being done to suppress the information here. I go to medical meetings all the time where I'm told that only, you know, the radical few, you know, without any justification at all, you know, are concerned about genetically modified food. How wonderful it is now that this genetically modified food is going to give us the ability to have, of course, increased crops and better crops and healthy crops, and now we're going to be able to feed the world. And the question is, will there be people left to feed? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, Our special guest this afternoon is Jeffrey Smith, we've had on many times before, talking about the genetically modified food. But Jeffrey certainly is one of the world's leading experts on this. I called him a few weeks ago, and he was traveling throughout Europe. And, Chris, he's written a new book going into the latest information that we know about the danger of genetically modified food. And would you mind just reviewing quickly for the audience, because we have new people with us now, what they found when they fed the genetically modified soy to rats, pregnant rats?
Well, they fed it to the rats, these female rats, 2 weeks starting before conception, and then the rats got pregnant, and they continued to feed the soy. And about 56% of the offspring died within the first 3 weeks. And they were also quite a bit smaller than the offspring of rats whose mothers were fed non-GM soy. The offspring from the normal natural soy-fed rats, they died at only about 10%. Then they repeated this experiment 3 times and got similar results each time. But then what happened was the laboratory that was doing the experiment, all of a sudden their rat chow became genetically engineered. It had a soy-based formula, and the supplier evidently started using genetically engineered soy. So they couldn't do any more studies because there was no controls, because all of a sudden all the rats in the facility were eating genetically engineered soy. But within 2 months, the offspring mortality of the entire facility, of all the rats in the facility, skyrocketed to over 50%. So this shows that it seems to be a systemic problem with this genetically engineered soy. Now, that's one particular study, one data point. In addition, they fed the soy to male rats, and they looked at the organs, and the testicles were a completely different color. The cells were a completely different shape. Then they also, another group, fed the soy to mice, and the sperm cells, the young sperm cells, were altered. Also, the testicles were different in that case as well. And the embryos of the parents that were fed genetically engineered soy functioned differently than the embryos of those that were fed natural soy. So we see a clear, consistent demonstration of reproductive problems associated with soy that has been genetically engineered.
Now, these were privately done studies. Certainly, Monsanto, when they do theirs, the people who are actually producing it, why they're not getting results like this at all. If they are they just not telling us?
Well, we don't know. First of all, they keep all of their information private.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jeffrey was simply pointing out that in these studies, and where were these studies actually done in Europe?
Well, in Russia, the study was done for rats fed genetically engineered soy, and in Italy, the studies were feeding mice genetically engineered soy.
All right, and finally, of course, there were dramatic changes as far as mortality. There were dramatic changes as far as the testicles and sperm production. What a wonderful way to sterilize, all these animals, of course, because certainly there were changes in the testes, changes in the sperm. What about there been any experiments done on human beings yet? Certainly they're not going to turn this loose on human beings without extensive studies, are they?
Well, unfortunately, there's only been a single human feeding study with genetically engineered foods. It was also done on genetically engineered soy. And this was sponsored by the UK government. And they found out that after feeding the genetically engineered soy to humans, part of the gene that was inserted into the soy to allow the soy to be herbicide tolerant transferred into the DNA of human gut bacteria and was integrated there on a stable basis. Now, what that means is, long after we stop eating genetically engineered soybeans, we may still have a product of that soybeans being produced inside of our own intestine over and over, 24/7 around the clock, producing this foreign protein that has never before been part of the human food supply. Now, the fact that genes transfer and can lodge themselves and function inside the DNA of human gut bacteria is an awesome discovery. It means, for example, that the corn that we eat that's genetically engineered to produce its own pesticide, if the gene that produces the pesticide that was inserted into corn transfers to gut bacteria, it could turn potentially our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. It also means that the antibiotic-resistant marker gene that is used in most genetically engineered soys, might transfer to disease-creating bacteria, causing super diseases engineered not to die when treated with antibiotics. Now, I was talking to this Russian National Academy of Sciences top scientist about her study, and she said when she discovered the high offspring mortality, she was told by her boss that he was being pressured by his boss at the Russian National Academy of Sciences, and she was not able to do any more studies on genetically engineered foods. Then she was finally offered a contract saying she could only do a study if she promises never to talk about her results for the next 3 years, and that the people that she works with could easily be fired at any time and replaced by this organization that wanted her to sign the contract. So it was complete domination over the information and personnel covering the thing. So she didn't sign it, and so she's stuck. She's unable to do any more research, and one of the scientists consoling her in the institute said, well, maybe this, you know, maybe the high offspring mortality, if it happens in humans, maybe it'll solve the human overpopulation problem.
Well, you know, there really are, Jeffrey, there really are people who feel that way and would love to see the vast majority of the people in our world simply eliminated. In fact, Jacques Cousteau is quoted in the November 1991 UNESCO Courier saying, you know, we're just going to have to eliminate 350,000 people a day to bring the world back in balance. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you think that's absurd, you just give us a call. We'll send you a copy of the UNESCO Courier. We have it both in French and in English. Aware, of course, as Jacques Cousteau said this, but totally suppressed by the controlled media. Well, certainly this person would be quite concerned about this. As you told this story all over Europe, it certainly is there concern on the part of the European Parliament, the European governments, or are there people there who really want to suppress the information?
Well, there's a lot of suppression of information. I tell you, it's been a struggle because the biotech side has billions of dollars, and we have an institute with thousands of dollars. In fact, fortunately, this month our donations are actually being matched for the first time at our Institute for Responsible Technology. But we are going up against this enormous
Goliath, juggernaut, as it were, right?
And the thing is, what they've done is they've arranged their public relations so that those of us who are trying to demand more science, we're being pre-labeled as anti-science. Those of us that are asking for rational arguments, we're being labeled as irrational. So when I traveled around and I met with, you know, some leaders are completely open to the information, but those that are pro-GM tend not to want to hear any evidence against their beliefs. And I saw that firsthand in Brazil and other places where I presented clear information of health dangers, and they simply would not listen. They heard it, but it didn't go in. They didn't react. They didn't want to know. They had made up their mind that the stuff was good. They didn't bother asking a single question. They said, oh, we've heard stuff like this before, and ignored it.
Well, so, you know, it was so disturbing. About 2 weeks ago, I went to a meeting of the leading conservative physicians and scientists in the country, where they were presenting, you know, this sort of condescending tone towards those people like yourself and myself that are trying to get the truth out. And there is obviously an organized effort to prevent the truth from getting out. Have you run into Josie McDonald over there in England or on the continent? I know she's been over there working as well, trying to get the word out.
Oh, yeah. Had dinner with Josie. She was with me in Brussels. She's a magnificent campaigner. She's fantastic. I had seen her before. I will say, though, that not all physicians are a lost cause. I was speaking at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. Very progressive doctors. There was a Chicago conference in the beginning of August. And I only had 30 minutes to present, and so I packed in information. But before I started, I said, I'd like you all to rate yourself from 1 to 100, how vigilant you have been in the past week at avoiding eating genetically engineered foods. And I said, okay, raise your hand if you're 0 to 20. And virtually all the hands went up from 0 to 20. After 26 minutes of presenting information about the thousands of sick, sterile, and dead animals, the thousands of toxic and allergic reactions, the damage to virtually every organ and system in laboratory animals, and the ways in which genetically engineered foods could create unpredicted side effects, I said, now rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you are going to be next week at avoiding bringing genetically engineered foods. and virtually everyone was 80 to 100. In 26 minutes, over 200 doctors changed lifelong eating habits based on evidence that genetically engineered foods are unsafe. And so this gives us hope that we can get this information out at this, through this radio show and through others and through other venues. So we're working now to get the information out through four major demographics. We're going to health-conscious shoppers. We're working with all the natural food leaders to remove any remaining genetically engineered ingredients from the natural food industry and setting up genetic GMO education centers and non-GMO shopping guides in all the health food stores probably early next year. We're also working with communities to create GM-free school campaigns. We're working to educate healthcare professionals like the doctors I spoke with so they prescribe to their patients to avoid eating GM. And now we're working with religious organizations who, by and large, when they look at the issue, realize that GMO really means God move over. It's operating in areas that are simply not appropriate for us to meddle in because we're making combinations and breaking species barriers. At least that's what they believe. And so it's not just a health issue. It also has a spiritual consequence to these organizations.
Well, of course, I think everything has a spiritual consequence and spiritual implications. But I said, my wife just brought me your book on genetic roulette, and it's a beautiful, beautiful book. It must have just come in by courier just at this moment. But
wow.
Anyway, of course, it's here and brand new, and it really goes into the background. And really, there's been problems, we know, for instance, with pigs when they were fed this genetically engineered corn. A lot of those got sterile, didn't they?
Absolutely. I spoke to Jerry Roseman, a farmer in Iowa, and what happened was he started feeding pigs genetically engineered corn, a certain variety, and they couldn't get pregnant, or they had false pregnancies or gave birth to bags of water, and he tried everything. He brought in a veterinarian, he brought a nutritional expert, he was a nutritional expert. They tested for all the known diseases and the rare diseases. They couldn't find anything, and then he found that there were two other farmers in the area that had the exact same problem, and they were all feeding similar genetically engineered corn. And then he went public with his information, and each time it was broadcast in the news, more farmers would call him with the same problem and the same issue, that the certain varieties of genetically modified corn were causing sterility among their pigs. Now there's about two dozen or maybe 25 farmers that we know about that had this with thousands and thousands of pigs, also with cattle. So we have a sterility issue both with the genetically engineered soy and with the corn, in both mice and rat experiments and in livestock feeding trials. Now, in addition, there's also reports of dead animals from genetically modified corn. 12 cows died on the German farm. In the Philippines, they found that water buffaloes, horses, and chickens died after feeding genetically modified BT corn. That's the corn that produces its own pesticide. And this is the corn that's already approved and used in corn flour and high fructose corn syrup and corn oil. Just so you know, popcorn is still safe. White corn and blue corn are still safe. Organic corn, it might have some tiny levels of contamination, but it's not allowed to be GM. However, the yellow corn, most of it is genetically engineered in the United States.
And, of course, certainly so many people eat it. You know, I just love corn on the cob, but it really isn't safe then because most of it is genetically modified, isn't it?
Well, I would say a smaller percentage of the corn on the cob is genetically engineered. A Cornell website that used to keep the statistics on this said 3 to 5% of sweet corn was genetically engineered years ago. I don't know what the percentage is now. I haven't done the research, and it's not normally posted. But a much larger percentage of the corn that's used in corn derivatives is genetically engineered. And so,
would
you read
like
that?
Corn,
you
would that be cornmeal or what?
All right, cornmeal, dextrose, maltodextrin, corn oil, all that's derived from the classic field corn that gets crushed and processed.
And now, of course, where would we get the corn oil? What would that be in?
Well, you know, I would say in processed foods, you might end up with corn, soy, cotton, or canola oils. They're all genetically engineered. So you have to be careful with processed foods.
All right, fine. So this is the thing, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to have to learn. You've got a lot of things to do to protect yourself. Unfortunately, in Europe and many other countries, this is not a problem. It's a problem here in America. They can't even let you know, if it's not genetically engineered. You get into trouble telling the people the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Can the people who are putting out non-GMO foods announce that? I know certainly that people, when they're dealing with milk, can't put down that their milk is not grown without, of course, this hormone in it that they're using so widely. But what about the people who are producing, simply pure food without not genetically modified? Are they allowed to put this on their labels?
Absolutely. Now, the FDA will not like it if someone uses the word GM-free. And they'll jump on it because it can't really guarantee that something is free altogether 100%. But the word non-GMO has been adopted by many, many companies. And if you go to a health food store and you look around, there's a lot of companies that say non-GMO soy or made without genetically engineered ingredients. And we're going to be setting up specific standards for that because right now it's kind of like the Wild West. Some people have a standard of a rejection threshold of a certain percentage, and others have a different percentage. Well, we're organizing with many, many leaders of the industry to come up with a uniform standard that's developed through third-party verification. We're going to put that out in a non-GMO shopping guide. In the meantime, if you go to seedsofdeception.com, there is a how to avoid eating GMOs section, which has an older version of a non-GMO shopping guide. And you also mentioned that there's these bovine growth hormone restrictions. That's very interesting that's going on right now. In July 2003, Oakhurst Dairy from Maine was sued by Monsanto for labeling their cartons as Farmer's Pledge, no artificial hormones.
No, this was milk.
This was milk.
Right.
Because Monsanto creates a genetically modified bovine growth hormone injected into cows to increase milk supply. It increases a known risk cancer hormone in the milk. It also increases the potential for fraternal twins, according to recent studies. So it's potentially hugely dangerous in the milk supply. So the Oakhurst Dairy settled with Monsanto and agreed to write a sentence along with their label saying, according to the FDA, there's no difference in milk treated with RBGH. Now, it turns out that's a lie, even though the person in charge of policy at the FDA wrote that in a white paper that there was no difference. He was Monsanto's former attorney and later became Monsanto's vice president. And what he was writing was at odds with the FDA scientists and even Monsanto's own study. There's quite a bit of difference between the two. However, my organization and others, my Institute for Responsible Technology and other organizations like the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility have been educating consumers about the health risks of genetically engineered foods, and we finally have reached the tipping point of consumer rejection of that milk. And so more and more dairies around the country are now committing not to use RBGH in the herds that they buy from. That includes Kroger's now and Publix supermarket and the direct company offices or restaurants of Starbucks. And many, many others. And so it gives us hope that what we're doing in terms of this education program will also move the market on genetically engineered crops as well.
Now, of course, we know that, for instance, they're having trouble now selling milk, and they're saying, gee, people aren't drinking as much milk as they used to. Wonder why that is. And I think it's probably because people are getting the truth out that, of course, there are these things in milk that really are harmful. And there are other things, of course, the relationship between milk and prostatic cancer and Parkinson's disease, well known and effectively suppressed. But now with this genetically engineered, I bet this really makes it dangerous. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Jeffrey, you were saying something about if the people were taking the milk that was made with this recombinant growth hormone, there is something in that that predisposes to cancer. What was that about?
Well, you see, there's a hormone in the milk called IGF-1. Now, that is already in milk anyway. It's in the human body. And milk drinkers tend to increase their levels of IGF-1. However, the milk from cows treated with RBGH, or it's also called RBST, is much higher levels of this hormone. Now, we do know that women, premenopausal women with high levels of this hormone, are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. That's the highest risk factor except family history. We know men with high levels of this are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. It's also implicated in lung and colon cancer. And again, it's in much higher levels in the dairy products from cows treated with RBGH. And so this is one of the greatest serious problems that we're facing in the milk from that is treated with Monsanto's hormones. Now, there was a study that came out in May of 2006, and it showed that the injections in the IGF-1 may be related also to high levels of fraternal twins, because IGF-1 tends to increase the amount of eggs and also egg survival. And so it was already known that it increased fraternal twins among cows. It turns out it may be in animals, it may be also doing that in humans, and may be responsible for the higher level of fraternal twins in the United States compared to England, which does not allow their cows to be injected.
Well, you know, it's fascinating that the average American is not allowed to hear this sort of thing. I mean, we've known for some time about the relationship between milk and breast carcinoma and prostatic cancer.
And now Monsanto has petitioned the FDA and FTC asking for it to be illegal for dairies to announce that they're not using RBGH. So that's being considered by the government. Now, so far, Monsanto has gotten just about anything they wanted from this and previous administrations. There's a Henry Miller, a former FDA person related to biotechnology, said in a New York Times interview, he said, Big Ag has gotten the government, the agencies, the regulatory agencies has done everything that Big Ag has asked them to do and told them to do. So I'm hoping that Monsanto doesn't win this particular battle and that we're still able to have companies mark on their products as no RBGH used.
All right, fine. If they do they still have to put that little statement in by the head of Monsanto that says, but of course the FDA says there's nothing to worry about?
Well, they don't actually, it's not a legal requirement. This was a settlement. If you read the white paper by Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney who became policy chief at the FDA, it was simply a recommendation, but it was not a requirement. And so it's something that they have bandied about and tried to make it, you know, heavy-handed. And so there's now so many dairies that have committed to stop using RBGH, Monsanto is kind of backed into a corner.
Well, of course, the thing is that you would think that somebody in the government would be concerned about the health of the people. But, you know, unfortunately, Monsanto has billions of dollars at their disposal. If they target you as a little milk producer or as a farmer or something like that, they can certainly make your life miserable.
Well, I tell you, there are people at the FDA that are concerned, but they don't necessarily have the last word on things. We found out in 1999 when a friend of mine sued the FDA on the GM crop issue, he got 44,000 formerly secret internal memos and letters, and it turns out that the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's scientists were that genetically engineered crops could cause unpredicted, hard-to-detect allergies, toxins, new diseases, nutritional problems, and they had urged their superiors to require long-term studies. But the person in charge of policy, as we just visited, was Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney and later their vice president. And his policy stated, which was a complete lie, stated that the agency was not aware of any information showing that the foods were different in any meaningful or uniform way. This was an entirely fabricated reality. But on the basis of this lie, the policy said no studies are necessary. Monsanto can introduce them without even telling the FDA.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, this is the problem we have. When you put all power in Washington, D.C., it's much easier to control one power center than 50 power centers. Might not be quite as efficient, if we had it at the state level, but it'd be a lot safer for your health, because I think that there are an awful lot of good people who work for government. They just have no voice, and if they want to keep their jobs, and they want to keep their pensions, and they want to keep their homes and their families, you better go along with the flow. And I know this is true in other instances, whether it be the Vioxx or some of the other things that they've been putting out that are poisoning the population, and it takes a pretty strong person to be willing to risk everything just to save a few million lives. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest today is Jeffrey Smith, and his book is Genetic Roulette. And how long has the book been out, Jeffrey?
It came out in April, and as you'll see, since it's now in front of you, it's got all the known health risks of genetically engineered foods divided into easy-to-read two-page spreads. So there's 65 health risks. The first 20 of them, they're divided into sections. The first 20 are simply adverse reactions, both laboratory animals, farmer reports, medical reports, and there's thousands of problems, thousands of sick, sterile, and dead animals, etc. Then there's 45 different two-page spreads, which describe the theoretical dangers, the fact that genes can transfer, the fact that there's more herbicides used on the crops, the fact that the virus-resistant crops may destroy or hurt our defenses against viral infection, all the different things that we now know. Many of the assumptions that were used as the basis for safety claims are shown to be untrue in this book. It's in two-page spread format because the left side is for those that want to scan it quickly. They want to just get the facts. It has a conclusion, maybe 3 to 5 bullet points, a quote from a scientist. The right side is for those that want to get more into the details. It has reference text leading back to more than 1,100 footnotes. It's also designed for decision makers so that the politician or the CEO or the superintendent of schools can read just the left side and flip through it and then pass it to his or her staff member to read the right side, which is the each two-page spread, which is the detailed reference text. That way, I figured out a way to reach those that wanted to just scan quickly and those that needed all the facts and figures to show that there really is overwhelming, irrefutable evidence of health risks.
What sort of response are you getting from the politicians here in the United States?
Well, I showed the book to the Senator Harkin, who is the chairman of the Agriculture Committee, Senate Agriculture Committee, and he was very impressed by looking at the book and said, maybe we should have something, we should look at this in more detail. So he was one among many. Senator John Tester wrote a note on the back of the book, if you see on the back cover, saying that untested, unlabeled, genetically engineered foods work against everything that I've known in the 30 years of my being a family farmer. So we have some traction. We have some interest. We're going against, of course, a strong multi-million-dollar lobbying effort, which, according to the Secretary of Agriculture under Clinton, said he saw the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. So we're going against
Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith, and I'm simply talking about his experience with some of the politicians, and of course, some of them, you know, have their minds made up, especially if their political point is that genetically modified food are the panacea for everything. They're going to certainly feed the hungry and clothe the naked. But before we go on, Jeffrey, I want you to get your website out, how people can get copies of the book, and how people can get information from you about this. Where can they begin to read more?
Okay. Well, if you go to seedsofdeception.com, that's where you can download an audio talk of mine for an hour. You can listen to it or put it on your iPod. You can watch a preview of Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, the movie. You can buy Seeds of Deception, which was the international bestseller, or the new Genetic Roulette. If you go to responsibletechnology.org, there you can also get involved in our GM-free school campaign. You can also make a donation. You can also look at other materials that we put out. We have an entire monthly syndicated column that goes out for free, so you can get it yourself or put it on your own website or send it around to your own listserv or publish it. We try and get information out in a lot of different ways, because this information, we know that it can convince people to change their eating habits, and we're trying to, our Institute for Responsible Technology is trying to hit the tipping point, the critical mass number of people to reject GM ingredients in the United States in order to achieve what happened in Europe in a single week, where virtually every major food manufacturer committed to remove GM ingredients from their European brands because of the consumer pushback there.
Well, now, is there any way that it would be possible to bring a class action suit against Monsanto? Are there any lawyers out there, greedy lawyers? But I'm afraid we're going to have to go to greedy lawyers since we have so many spineless politicians. And, of course, it was the greedy lawyers who were able to do something about the tobacco industry, certainly not the National Institute of Health, the FDA, or the CDC, or any of these organizations who knew that literally tens of millions of Americans had died needlessly because of the smoking. So have you looked into this at all?
Well, it's certainly something that I've considered. The issue is there's so little research. What happens is the research information is suppressed. Scientists that find out problems are fired, stripped of responsibilities, forced out. They're denied opportunities to use genetically engineered crops. They're denied opportunities to get more funding for follow-up research. And so we really are handicapped. You'll notice that with the 65 health risk, there's an enormous amount of reference material, but we're only dealing with about two dozen published peer-reviewed animal feeding studies, and then we have to rely on medical reports and other things because there's just simply not enough information. And without that information, it's hard to build a case. I think the case is built now. I think it's strong enough, and there are class action lawsuits happening against Monsanto and others for price fixing or for contamination. At least they've attempted it. And what we would like to see is this kind of thing with the health issues. And I haven't talked to an attorney since this book has come out, but it would be interesting to see if they thought that there'd be enough information. But you have to show evidence of harm. And since there's only been one human feeding study, no human clinical trials, and just horrible statistics that seem to correlate with the introduction of genetically modified crops.
How can they turn this loose on the entire public with just one human feeding study? And how many people were there, and how long did it last?
Well, the feeding study was published in 2004. The stuff was released in 1996. In fact, they released this food before it had probably ever been fed to human beings. So it had not only had no studies, but some of this food gets on the market, and the first people to eat it are those that buy it in the market. And they've never tested in a clinical trial. Now, the human feeding study had seven human volunteers that had colostomy bags, and they just basically looked inside the gut bacteria of those who had just eaten genetically modified soy burger and soy milkshake. They found, oops, before they fed the milkshake, they were already housing genetically engineered genes in their gut bacteria for some previous meal. So there was a gene transfer that was totally unpredicted by those scientists. They were totally surprised. The genes even survived digestion through the stomach and small intestine and ended up in this colostomy bag. So once they found that out, what did they do? They closed up shop and never found out if other things also transferred, like antibiotic genes or BT toxin-producing genes that come in corn that produces their own pesticide. So they did not want, they did not have the ability to follow up because it was a UK government-funded study. And the UK government is very pro-GM.
Yeah.
And last time they funded a major study, it turns out there was massive damage to rats that were fed genetically engineered potatoes. The scientist was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit, probably due to a phone call from a prime minister's office to that scientist's director.
And, of course, there's a very close relationship between the hierarchy of Great Britain and, of course, the hierarchy that controls both of our political parties here in the United States. It's known as the Anglo-American establishment, and we even carry a book by that title if you really want to understand what's behind it. Well, so right now, are you getting help from other people? I know that you've been certainly almost like a lone crusader here in the United States and speaking wherever you possibly could, but are you getting help from others? Is there any other group besides your institute that's really on the front lines of this battle?
Well, our institute's finally getting some help. We, like Mercola.com Foundation, which runs the Mercola.com website, they're sending an article of mine each week to over a million subscribers and asking for people to donate to the institute, which they'll match during this campaign dollar for dollar. We work with other organizations around the country, but it's not a lot of groups, and I'm concerned because there's some sugar farmers, some beet sugar farmers in the Pacific Northwest that want to introduce genetically modified sugar beets into the U.S. food supply next year. And we need to mount a campaign to stop that. And we're kind of busy at the same time trying to just stop the existing crops. And so we're being pulled in a lot of directions. And, you know, I got a call today to go back to Brazil, and I got a an email yesterday to go to Australia, and then and I'm emailing someone because they want me in Poland. So it's like we're really stretched to the breaking point. So I'm trying to raise money to hire more staff so we can do what we need, because the facts now are overwhelming. You present to any open-minded person the information that we've collected with more than 30 scientists over the last 2 years, and they understand the incredible ramifications of this. And so we are getting it out more and more. I'm working with major companies from the natural food industry to take out GM ingredients from their products. So we've got some traction, and we're getting there. And I think we're going to, if we can get all the sticks in the fire, I think we can take this out within the next 2 years.
Well, you know, I'm really quite impressed by your public relations people, who are really very fastidious and did everything they could to work with us to get your information out. So you can certainly congratulate them.
Thank you. I will.
And certainly then, of course, the other thing is, you mentioned that there are some companies that you're working with, you know, some manufacturers. So these food manufacturers, who are the good guys who really want to do something?
Well, right now there's a group called the Non-GMO Project, which is a organization establishing the criteria for labeling a product as non-GMO. And on the board of that organization is the CEO of United Natural Foods, a good friend of mine, Michael Funk, who's the largest health food distributor in the country. Also the CEO of Organic Valley, of Eden Foods, of Nature's Path, of Lundberg Family Farms, and a senior executive from Whole Foods. All of them, the leaders of the natural food industry, are getting together and creating a push for defining what non-GMO means according to a third-party verification. And they are also implicitly supporting our efforts to educate people so that they can have clear choices to buy non-GM, which in itself can move the market. There's a lot of people in the natural food industry that hate GMOs. They wish they were never there. In fact, many major CEOs in the conventional foods hate GMOs and wish they were never there, but they don't take a stand on it. So we're now working with the natural food industry, which is much more proactive and public in their position. Now, many of them won't publicly say that they're bad for health. That's my job. But they'll say we're giving consumers choices, and they don't want them in their food. So that's what I do.
Now, how can we get back on your list? I was on your email list and getting your emails on a regular basis, and it's been, I suppose, 3 or 4 months since we got one. How can our listeners get onto your email list?
Okay. Well, you can go to either seedsofdeception.com, which is the publisher's website, or you can go to responsibletechnology.org, which is where you can also become a member. So there's a free syndicated column. I'm sorry to hear you're not getting the things. I just put out 3 months of really good newsletters. We summarized the allergy dangers of genetically engineered soy in May, the allergy dangers of genetically modified corn in June, and the toxins and reproductive problems in July.
Now, where are they posted, those articles?
Yes, those are all posted. They're archived, and you can download them. You can distribute them. You can reprint them without having to contact me. They're free syndicated columns.
All right. And now, is that on responsibletechnology.org?
Yes, you can go to responsibletechnology.org. And also, we have a member program now. So if you use $25 for a year, and you get some discounts on the books if you become a member. And that'll be matched right now by Mercola.com Foundation for the time being. So we have a program to get the word out, and it's, you know, I kind of hit out for over a year finishing up this book, Genetic Roulette. The entire year I kept thinking it'll be done in a month or two. So, and so I didn't really bother, you know, focusing on fundraising and membership drives and relationships with other organizations. And I sort of lifted my head in the spring and realized, oh, we kind of need money and we kind of need staff and we need all these great strategies. We need to move forward on this. And so I've been scrambling to catch up, and now that the book is out.
All right. Now, you have actually the seedsofdeception.com published both books?
Yes. Well, Both books are published through that organization.
And you actually have a video as well.
Yes. There's a video called Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, and it's amazingly effective at compelling watchers, viewers, to want to participate in a GM-free school campaign to help protect kids who are most at risk from genetically engineered ingredients. It's just, we've just put it up on Google for the first time, although you won't be able to find the link to it. You'll see the preview of it on our website at seedsofdeception.com, which is about 6 minutes. It's 28 and a half minutes in total. And it's part of a package called the GMO Trilogy, which has an award-winning European documentary. It's got the hidden dangers in kids' meals. It's got three other features on there as bonus materials, plus an audio CD, which you're welcome to make copies of and distribute. So we have sponsors for that, from really great sponsors, in fact, from the natural food industry that help pay for the reproduction of that so it can be sold very inexpensively in health food stores to get people who are not normally looking for this information to get them to buy it, realize how bad it is, and make their shopping choices on that basis.
And is that available through the Seeds of Deception or the Responsible Technology?
Yeah, seedsofdeception.com has all of the products. In fact, you can link between the two sites. But you go to seedsofdeception.com, and you can find the GMO Trilogy. You can find the Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals. We also distribute some other very important DVDs related to the GMO issue. In fact, one genetically modified ingredient, which we haven't talked about, is aspartame, possibly one of the worst genetically engineered ingredients. We have a whole video on that called Sweet Misery by someone who claims to have been a victim of aspartame poisoning. So we are trying to get the word out in packaged form so that people don't have to become experts. They can pass on audios, videos, or links to articles or printout articles so that everyone can have access to the information and an ability to spread it.
And I think it's so vitally important that our listeners take heed. This is not just something we're putting on to be dramatic. I believe this is a very real problem. We mentioned Josie McDonald. We've had Josie on a number of times. She certainly comes to us through our friends over in Great Britain, and she's had the opportunity to talk to members of Parliament and large groups over there, in Europe. And fortunately, through her efforts and through certainly Jeffrey's efforts, why most of the countries over in Europe have rules against this. Now, what's the situation? My understanding is that many of these countries wouldn't allow these products to be sold. Have they changed that at all?
Well, it turns out that the driver has largely been the industry. In Europe, even though there has been an approved list of genetically modified crops for food consumption for years, the food industry in April 1999 said, we're not going to use GM ingredients. They have to label it over there, so if they use it, they get found out. And so that has really stopped GM products into Europe, even though the pro-GM European Commission continues to approve over the objections of the majority of countries that are members of the EU. The majority of countries do not want to approve new crops for food or planting, but they don't have enough clout to win this qualified majority, which they need. And so it goes to this board of bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats, who are very pro-GM, and they continue to rubber stamp the approvals. However, there are countries like Poland and Greece and northern part of Austria that are very much against withholding. They're trying to stop the planting of certain genetically modified crops. Poland has banned genetically modified products in animal feed. I was just over in Ireland in June, and they created a coalition government with the Green Party, and one of the Green Party's demands that was accepted was that Ireland become a GM-free zone, not planting any genetically engineered crops. And the person that I was on the panel with turned out a week later to become the Minister of Food and Horticulture for the country. So there is a strong group of anti-GM politicians, activists, companies, and then there's also a pro-GM contingent, which unfortunately are in high positions in the European Union government.
But, of course, the attitude of the general people over there is in opposition. I mean, don't the people have a lot more knowledge in Europe than the people here in America?
Oh, absolutely. There's over 80% of the people completely reject GM in the UK, even though Tony Blair has been pro-GM for years, and so now appears his counterpart, Gordon Brown. In the United States, however, if you ask the average American, have you ever eaten a genetically engineered food in your life, 60% say no, 15% say I don't know. Only 1 in 4 are even aware that they've ever eaten a GM food. Now, I want to repeat again, how do you avoid eating genetically engineered foods? Well, you can buy organic, you can buy products that say non-GMO, or you can learn what to read on the labels: soy, corn, cotton, and canola. These are the chief four genetically engineered crops. You got to know the derivatives if you want to be thorough. And those are listed at seedsofdeception.com.
All right. This is very important, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, get your web pages out so people can get in touch with you if they want to.
Sure. Seedsofdeception.com and responsibletechnology.org.
All right, fine. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. It's very real. And you better get the information. If you care about your family and you read some of these studies, and the animal studies are frightening, and they're even... basically, they did one set of human studies, didn't they? Or was that animal studies where they found the alteration in the white cells in the kidney?
Oh, yeah.
Was that animal or human?
That was an animal study.
Animal.
They never tested that kind of thing on humans.
All right, fine. They just feed it to them and see what happens. And when they start dropping, well, gee, we just made another mistake. Hey, hang on there. We got just a couple of minutes more before we're going to let you go right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jeffrey, why don't you go ahead? You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us today.
Okay. Years ago, in the 1980s, there was a deadly epidemic. About 100 people died and 5 to 10,000 fell sick. They traced it to a brand of L-tryptophan, a food supplement, that was sold over the counter. Only one of six brands actually caused this epidemic, and it turns out that company was genetically engineering the bacteria to produce its supplement more efficiently. However, that process of genetic engineering is wrought with unpredicted side effects and was almost certainly the responsible for the contaminated batches. Now, the only reason that they were able to discover that an epidemic was going on was because the disease was rare, it was acute, and it came on quickly. All three characteristics had to be in place. If it had just been a cancer or heart disease or something that was common, or a non-serious disease, or if it had taken 20 years to onset, we would never have taken that product off the market. So what about the genetically engineered crops that were introduced in 1996? Were they responsible for the doubling of the food-related illnesses between 1994 and 2001? Were the massive increases in obesity, diabetes, migraines, autism, lymphomas? We have no idea because no one is looking and the government is not looking out for us. So we need to make decisions ourselves to protect ourselves and our family, and I strongly encourage individuals to avoid eating genetically engineered foods, learn the brands to shop for, and stock your cabinets with those that don't have soy, corn, cotton, or canola, and then to share that information with others. I welcome you to come to seedsofdeception.com or read about us in responsibletechnology.org and take a look at our books, at our DVDs, at our audios, and see what appeals to you that you want to pass around, because we can't let this, we can't wait for ABC News or Fox News or any major media that's controlled by the corporate complex right now to get this information out. It's got to be something we do ourselves to protect ourselves, our family, and future generations. Because one of the worst problems of genetic engineering is not just the health, but the self-propagating genetic pollution. Once you release this stuff into the environment, we have no technology to fully recall it. The effects of genetic engineering might outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. So we need to move quickly, because this is not something we have the luxury of time over. These things... next year they want to introduce genetically modified sugar beets, and they want to introduce genetically modified plums. In fact, there's more than 172 different species that have been field trialed and more than 50,000 field trials in the United States waiting to be introduced, and this is something that we need to stand up to and stop ourselves.
Well, God bless you for everything you're doing. We'll look forward to having you on all of our other programs, and we'll do everything we can to help. We think you're doing a great job. Thanks so much, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we think this is a very important subject. If you're interested in aspartame, we do carry that DVD, Sweet Misery. We carry the next one in the series, Sweet Remedy. We have certainly two four-tape sets on aspartame. We have several books, Excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills, the ultimate encyclopedia on it, over 1,000 pages in the book, Aspartame, The Forgotten Epidemic, and then, of course, you'll certainly find them at radioliberty.com or by calling our number at 1-800-544-8927. You can get a copy of today's program on CD or on a tape. We have our interviews with Josie McDonald, who speaks on this as well. In fact, we have a four-tape set now on genetically modified food. We certainly recommend it to you. We carry a book called GMO Foods, Beware the Genetically Modified Food Epidemic. The book, again, is entitled GMOs, Beware of the Coming Food Apocalypse. GMOs, Beware of the Coming Food Apocalypse. It's really rather inexpensive. I think it's $8.95, but it's got a lot of introductory information. And then, of course, the book that Jeffrey is talking about, it's Genetic Roulette. You can order from us or you can order from him. We don't have any copies in yet. We want you to get the information. So we have a four-tape set on genetically modified food. We have, of course, the book GMOs, Beware the Coming Food Apocalypse, and you can get copies of today's program either on tape or on CDs. There is a program for mass population control. If any of you would like to see the article from the UNESCO Courier about Jacques Cousteau wanting to eliminate 350,000 people a day, he makes Adolf Hitler look like a piker, and you'll never hear him criticized by, of course, Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or by most of the people who are employed by the establishment, because they control both the right and the left, the conservatives and the liberals. And this information, of course, has been very effectively suppressed in America. There is a program, you need to get my talk on, Nundercolored Genocide. There is a genocidal program in America today. Our talk on planned population reduction, it's about 2.25 hours. It's on DVD, and, of course, there we go into the background of the plan to eliminate most of the world's population. You say, that could never happen. Let me point out, ladies and gentlemen, that back at the turn of the last century, in 1900, one in every 33 people got cancer. Today it's one in every two people get cancer, and it's increasing. What Jeffrey was saying about the relationship between milk drinking and breast carcinoma, and milk drinking and prostate carcinoma. Why do you think one in three men gets a breast carcinoma and one in six women gets breast carcinoma? One in three men gets prostatic carcinoma. One in six or seven women get breast carcinoma. They know its relationship to milk, but you're not going to see this mentioned by the controlled media, because aren't there too many people in the world? And besides that, Medicare can't possibly support so many people in the future. The whole system's going to go down unless we can get rid of an awful lot of people. You need to see my Population Control Agenda monograph. It's free on our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can get my talk on population control. You can get the four-tape set on population control, which explains why they outlawed DDT, and that's cost about 100 million lives, about 100 million lives in the last 33 years. And every one of those was a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. There really are dark spiritual forces out there. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.